Welcome to TSOH Weekly, episode number 10. My name is Alex Morris of the TSOH Investment Research Service. With me, as always, Francisco Oliveira of Aravilo Capital Management. Today's discussion is going to be on Disney, and specifically the company's Parks, Experiences, and Products segment, or DPEP, as it's usually called. On Tuesday, the company put out an 8K with a slide deck with some historic results for the business and outlining some of the investments that they're making in the next 5 to 10 years, which we're going to get more into more. Unfortunately, we did not get to watch the presentation because it was one of those investor days that was behind closed doors, which everybody hates, but still happens every once in a while. Thankfully, we have some analyst notes and other things to lean on to give us a little bit more color. But Francisco, what are your thoughts on, you know, what you saw in the 8K, kind of the trajectory of the DPEP segment generally, and how you think about where this business is going in the years ahead?
Yeah, it's an interesting presentation given that everything is going on at Disney. My interpretation of everything is, you know, Bob Iger, previous quarter, goes out and says that, you know, the driver of the business, the priority of the company, is three segments. Their studio, which has their IP and drives everything, the creation of content, the parks business, and D2C. And then this presentation was showcasing how they expect to move forward over the long term with the parks. And the headline is that for the previous 10 years, they spend $30 billion roughly in capital expenditures at the parks. Over the next 10 years, that's going to go to $60 billion, so roughly double. And they're doing it to turbocharge the growth of the parks, and to have not positioning it as like it's going to be maintenance, it's going to be upkeep, and we can grow. We're like, hey, we can grow well today, but now we can really turbocharge that. And the way they would do it, you know, expanding lands, using the acres that are unused today, potentially building more hotels. And adding cruise ships, which I believe they're targeting 7 to 8 total cruise ships in by 2026. And the parks today, look, they represent 80% of LTM operating income. Obviously, that would go lower as Disney Plus's losses are reduced. But it's you know, the biggest driver of the business today. And I think at the headline, you can be scared with increased capital expenditures. But if you believe that it's really to create growth, there is a path for them to do this. In 2005, when Bob Iger became CEO, the Parks and Experiences operating income, including consumer, was under $2 billion. And today is over $9 billion. So I'm pretty sure that they manage this business well. You can see by the results, and they could put the capital expenditures to work.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, to the point that you made, I pulled some of the data going back to, you know, call it the start of the Iger era, 10-year periods, 2004 to 2013, CapEx for DPEP. You know, roughly guessing what's DPEP based on how it was reported historically. DPEP CapEx was $16 billion at the start of that period. In 04, the business earned $1.6 billion. Next 10-year period, 14 to 23, CapEx was roughly $34 billion. And starting EBIT for DPEP was $4.1 billion. You know, now we're here today and talking about $60 billion over the next 10 years. And you know, we're starting from a business with roughly $10 billion in run rate EBIT, call it. So, you know, it just speaks to the significant advances in the profitability of the business. You know, we've seen some nice trends in terms of the international parks after some difficult periods, and obviously the COVID impact at both parts of the business. One part I find interesting in all this is when you look at attendance relative to per cap guest spending. We have global statistics going back to at least 2010. If you look from 2010 through the end of last year, cumulative attendance only increased by about 10%, which, you know, is inclusive of the Shanghai opening. On the other hand, per cap guest spending has more than doubled over that same period. So I wonder, as I read this, I wonder if part of the objective is to kind of broaden out the base and to get a little bit more of a even distribution in terms of the forward growth rate over the next 5 to 10 years between kind of the volume and pricing components of what this business looks like.
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. I think, you know, I think when you've seen some of their latest transformations and park expansions, take, you know, Hollywood Studios in Orlando, they added a Toy Story Land, and then roughly a year or two later, they added the Star Wars Land. And that's a significant amount of space that people can be in, places to eat, places, there's several rides. And that park, you know, I went several months ago. I can't imagine going to that park today without those two lands. I mean, my perspective would be, well, there's not that much to do, or I can't spend the whole day here. But that probably wasn't the perspective back then, before those opened. So I think today you see just, you know, a lot of opportunities to continue to do that. Iger mentioned potentially adding an Avatar Land in Disneyland in California, using Wakanda and how you can incorporate that in the parks, and Frozen and Coco. So there's a lot of IP that's still, you know, fresh, to the consumer in terms of the movies, right? And how they can incorporate in that dual lens. So that definitely. If you can take, you know, California Adventure or Disneyland and have a new land that adds 10% more rides, to your point, do you necessarily need to hike prices by like 30%, you know, to give an example? You know, you don't. So I think that is a plus side, and as we've seen over the past year or two, you know, aggressive price increases have created really bad headlines and poor, you know, poor satisfaction from consumers. And that's something you definitely want to avoid here.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think part of it also, you know, speaking of kind of the volume-based growth is some of the expansion, you know, outside of the parks, which are the most prevalent, obviously, but some of the data that they outlined on the cruises and how they've, you know, expanded the fleet and how there's further expansion coming over the next few years. You know, it's kind of thought of as a sideshow, and we don't have clean numbers on what those results actually look like. But again, it's one of those things where as you compare to where the business was at even 15 years ago, you start to see how international and cruises kind of on their own are probably at a place that's roughly comparable to what the domestic parks business was earning at that point in time, which is kind of crazy when you really think about what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, you know, we got a 5x increase in operating income in the parks and consumer since Iger became CEO. And today, to my point earlier, it's 80% of the operating income. So as an investor today, you know, even though a lot of the focus is where how's Iger going to position the company strategically, from the streaming assets to linear assets, integrating Hulu, what to do with the assets in India. Those are big, big questions. But as an investor today, you know, the biggest driver of your profits and operating income, is the parks. So having a presentation that focuses on how they want to invest in turbocharge that, I think it's interesting. And as an investor, given the valuation of the company is today, something you and I were discussing, the enterprise value is under 200 billion today. If we're talking about a business with operating income EBIT, of over 9 billion, that we could imagine could the way it's trending and the growth it's had, especially internationally recently, because it was losing money internationally until a couple of quarters ago, that could easily be 10, 11, 12 billion in the short term, in the medium term. And as we're thinking about an enterprise value relative to that operating income, it's not a crazy multiple for the value of that asset. And we're not even, you know, considering Disney Plus or ESPN, Marvel, the value of its IP. So it's Disney has become a parks business from an investor perspective and financial perspective, as of late.
Starting to rhyme a little bit with some discussions we've had in the past with Meta and FRL being worth -$100 billion and what that meant for the FOA segment. But we'll leave that discussion for another day.
That's a good one.